Today's broadcast was originally recorded on May 21st, 2024.
Stop the radical left-wing love affair with criminals. Stop the insanity.
The insanity? How about we stop all those dark ads for hundreds of millions of dollars of lies?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
How about we stop that?
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Today.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. Down the stairs, clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am from Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles. This is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, also in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW, Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York, WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us for another thrilling edition of the Bradcast, because, yes, we are back after an extended weekend to tend to a family funeral out of town, and my thanks to those who sent their condolences. They were and are greatly appreciated. Getting back to my old home state of Missouri for such an event was very interesting around this time of year, as I got a chance to speak with a lot of both right-wingers in the state. Yes, my own family is full of them, Desi Doyen.
I think everybody's family has them.
I guess they are. And even those who consider themselves to not be right-wingers, who will tell you that they're actually, you know, Democrats or they're liberals, but they still end up repeating nonsense that has clearly been fed to the American electorate via Donald Trump, the far-maga right, whether it comes via Fox News or any of the admitted right-wing outlets, or via social media, which buries even me at times with this right-wing nonsense. At least I know it's nonsense. Apparently many, however, do not know that, Des.
I know. It's rather disturbing.
But it also comes via regular old mainstream media outlets, like ads that run during baseball games, including the World Series. We'll be joined momentarily by a researcher who has been tracking ad spending this year by a group that I had never heard of. They call themselves Citizens for Sanity. I'm guessing most of our listeners, and frankly, most of America, has not heard of this group either. Nonetheless, they have been blanketing the airwaves, particularly in battleground states and swing districts, with the most vile, far-right, racist, transphobic, MAGA nonsense that you can imagine, and they are spending more than just about any other group out there, including more than $90 million on ads in just the last few months before the 2022 midterm elections. They've spent more than just about any other group, and they are doing so again in 2024. If they spent more than $90 million for the midterms, imagine what they're going to do this year. So who are they, and what is this group, which The Guardian describes as being run from the, quote, nerve center for the MAGA right by a bunch of former Trump administration officials? What are they hoping to accomplish with these ads that until recently would have been regarded as little more than right-wing extremist propaganda relegated to the far reaches of the dark right-wing web? Well, we will discuss all of that with researcher Victoria Kadostin of documented.net shortly. But first, I want to try to get as caught up as possible with some of the key news from over the weekend and into this week, including today, as I'm sure you have heard. Over the weekend, Iran's far-right cleric president and its defense minister were both among those killed in a helicopter crash during foggy conditions in northern Iran.
Because what we all really need now is a destabilized Middle East.
Yes, I'm sure this will help. 5 days of mourning has now been called, with the selection of a new president likely to come in the days ahead. The chief prosecutor at the International Criminal Court in The Hague, that's the world's top war crimes court, over the weekend sought arrest warrants for leaders of both Israel and Hamas, including Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, as Israel's brutal war in Gaza continues in its now seventh month following Hamas's deadly attack against Israel last October. The court's prosecutor accused Netanyahu, his defense minister, Yoav Gallant, and three Hamas leaders, all of war crimes and crimes against humanity in the Gaza Strip and in Israel. A panel of three judges will decide whether to issue the arrest warrants and allow a case to proceed. That usually takes around 2 months to make such a decision. Netanyahu has come under heavy, growing pressure in Israel itself to end the war, with thousands of Israelis joining weekly demonstrations, calling on the government to reach a deal to bring home Israeli hostages being held in Hamas captivity. In recent days as well, the two other members of Netanyahu's war cabinet, Gallant and the more moderate Benny Gantz, have both threatened to resign if Netanyahu does not spell out a clear post-war vision for Gaza. And a UK court on Monday ruled that WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, wanted in the U.S. on espionage charges, can appeal his extradition to the U.S. in British courts, a decision likely to further drag out an already years-long legal saga. The 52-year-old Assange has been indicted on 17 espionage charges and one charge of computer misuse of his website's publication of a trove of classified U.S. documents almost 15 years ago. High court judges in London ruled in Assange's favor on this matter, whether he can appeal, after his attorneys argued that the U.S. government provided, quote, blatantly inadequate assurances that he would have the same free speech protections as an American citizen if he is extradited from Britain. I suspect we will have more on all of the above in the days ahead. And, of course, back home, the MAGA madness continues, as the New York Times revealed late last weekend that corrupt far-right Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito had flown an upside-down American flag, a symbol at the time of Donald Trump's phony Stop the Steal movement, flew that flag upside down at his house in the days following the Trump-incited January 6, 2021 insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, even as Alito was and still is deciding on cases related to both the insurrection and the false claims of election fraud in the 2020 election. Alito blames his wife for hanging their flag upside down for days.
That's such a right-wing thing to
isn't do. Isn't it, though? He claims in response to what were profane attacks against Donald Trump by his neighbors following the 2020 election. Despite judicial standards, optional ones, at least when it comes to the Supreme Court justices, that are supposed to result in recusal of judges if they may reasonably be seen as having a conflict of interest, Alito has recused himself from exactly nothing, none of the cases related to Trump's attempt to steal the 2020 election, including the High Court's upcoming ruling on presidential immunity, which has delayed Trump's felony trial related to 2020 election interference for months now, thanks in no small part to Alito, who says his wife hung up, stopped the steel flag on their house, and of course, Justice Clarence Thomas's wife, Ginny, who actually participated in the January 6th insurrection. Neither of those two men have recused from any case at the Supreme Court having anything to do with this.
This is like the Real Housewives of the MAGA movement.
Ain't it, though? And speaking of election interference, the defense rested on Tuesday in New York in Donald Trump's 2016 election interference case on 34 felony charges related to falsification of business documents to hide Trump's hush money payment to porn star Stormy Daniels just before the 2016 election to help him unlawfully win that one. Team Trump rested their case after completing testimony by a former Trump attorney by the name of Robert Costello, who testified against another former Trump attorney, Michael Cohen, who had received some $420,000 in reimbursement from Donald Trump while Trump was serving in the White House in hopes of covering up Cohen's hush money payments to Daniels, which Cohen testified were made at the behest of Trump to help his presidential campaign that year. Costello was upbraided by the judge in the case on Monday after both the jury and the entire courtroom, including the media, were cleared out in response to Costello's obnoxious behavior on the stand. But that was it. Costello was the only major witness for the defense. And despite Trump's claims for months, claiming that he wanted to testify during the New York criminal trial, that he had, quote, no problem with testifying, and even insisting that he would, quote, absolutely testify, well, you'll be shocked to learn he did not. That, even after he said repeatedly during the trial itself, during remarks to the media from inside the courthouse in that echoey hallway, when they asked him if he planned to testify, he said over and over again, well, yes, he did.
I'm testifying. I tell the truth. I mean, all I can do is tell the truth.
Yes.
You plan to testify your trial in New York?
Yeah, I would testify, absolutely. It's a scam.
Yeah, it's
turns
a scam.
Out he did not testify.
It's a scam, right. But the scam is that he ever had any intention of testifying at this trial. We will no doubt discuss more about that on our midweek Catch Up with a K show tomorrow, with the jury now sent home until next Tuesday, right after the Memorial Day holiday, when both sides will give their closing arguments in the case before handing the case to the jury to decide on the fate of the disgraced former president facing possible incarceration for the first time in U.S. history. And in not unrelated accountability news on Tuesday, as we move back to Donald Trump's 2020 election interference. Yes, it's difficult to keep it all straight, since it doesn't seem that Donald Trump can win an election without unlawfully interfering in it. Former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani pleaded not guilty on Tuesday to 9 felony charges stemming from his role in the failed effort to steal Joe Biden's 2020 election victory for Donald Trump in Arizona that year. Giuliani appeared remotely for the arraignment that was held in a Phoenix courtroom after evading process servers in the case for weeks before he was finally served after a surprise birthday party for his 80th birthday in Florida. Surprise, you've been served. Can't think of a nicer gift to get for him. During his remote appearance at this arraignment, Giuliani said he did not have an attorney at this time, but that he will. When he was asked by the court whether he needed counsel appointed for the arraignment, Giuliani said no, that he was capable of handling it himself. I guess he's been arraigned enough times at this point that he's getting good at it. The judge required Giuliani to post a secured appearance bond of $10,000, as well as To appear in Arizona within the next 30 days for booking procedures. Giuliani also pleaded not guilty to 13 felonies in Georgia some months ago as part of the broad conspiracy case against Trump and 18 others there for trying to steal the election in that state via a similar fake elector scheme to the one that played out in Arizona and in other ways when it comes to Georgia. And he was found liable for defamation in a civil lawsuit filed against him by two Atlanta area election workers. They were awarded $148 million in damages in that case. Giuliani has, in hopes of paying them nothing, has since filed bankruptcy to avoid that penalty. The case in Arizona and the criminal case in Georgia, however, could result in jail time for the disgraced former New York City mayor and Trump attorney. His attorney in his Arizona trial in this particular case is now scheduled to take place in October. Last week, another Trump attorney, John Eastman, who devised a strategy to persuade Congress not to certify the election, well, he was the first defendant in the case in Arizona to be arraigned. He pleaded not guilty to the charges as well. But Trump's attorneys, Giuliani and Eastman, were not the only ones criminally arraigned as part of the scheme on Tuesday in Phoenix. Former Arizona Republican Party Chair Kelly Ward and at least 11 others were also arraigned on conspiracy, forgery, and fraud charges. Ward and nine others, including her husband, have so far pleaded not guilty in this case. Her trial date is set for October 17, about 3 weeks before the November election. Arizona authorities unveiled the felony charges last month against these Republicans who had submitted a document to Congress falsely declaring that Trump had won in Arizona that year. The defendants included five lawyers connected to the former president and two former Trump aides. The indictment alleges that Ward, a former state senator who led the GOP in Arizona from 2019 till early 2023, that she organized the fake electors and urged then Vice President Mike Pence to declare them to be the state's true electors, even though they were not. Trump himself, for reasons that are still not clear to me, was not charged in the Arizona case, but was referred to as an unindicted co-conspirator. Arizona is now the fourth state where allies of the former president have been charged with using false or unproven claims about fraud related to the election as part of this fake electors scheme. The 11 people who claim to be Arizona Republican electors met in Phoenix on December 14 to sign a certificate saying they were, quote, duly elected and qualified electors, and asserting that Trump is the one who carried the state when it was actually Joe Biden. The document was later then sent to Congress and the National Archives. But of eight lawsuits that unsuccessfully challenged Joe Biden's victory in Arizona alone, one was actually filed by the 11 fake Arizona electors. They had asked a federal judge to decertify the results and block the state from sending its real results to the Electoral College. In dismissing the case, the judge concluded the Republicans had, quote, failed to provide the court with factual support for their extraordinary claims. So that case was tossed out. Days after that lawsuit was dismissed, however, the 11 then participated in the certificate signing. Even though the case had been thrown out by a court, still claiming to be the, quote, duly elected and qualified electors. So, yeah, fraud, conspiracy, forgery, all of that. There are still more arraignments scheduled in the days ahead in this case. On June 16, for example, for sitting state senator Jake Hoffman, on June 7 for former Trump chief of staff Mark Meadows, who is out there right now producing propaganda and disinformation over our public airwaves. We'll get to that shortly. And on June 18th next month for Trump attorney Boris Epstein. He will also be arraigned. And finally, before we get to my guest today, I should note that voters in several states around the country headed to the polls on Tuesday for ongoing down-ticket primary elections, as well as presidential primary elections in some cases, despite the fact that the candidates are all but officially, the nominees are all but officially chosen in each party. But voters were at the polls on Tuesday in Kentucky, in Oregon, in Idaho, in Georgia, and a few other states, including for a special election out here in California, up in our 20th congressional district, in a special election to fill the seat vacated by former Republican House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, who resigned from Congress not long after he was ousted by his own party from the speaker's chair.
God, that feels like that happened 5 years ago.
And they haven't even held the special election to fill it yet.
Yeah.
Among a number of the contests we will be watching on Tuesday, of course, is a really interesting state Supreme Court race in Georgia, where one of the reasons this is worth watching, according to Jeff Singer over at Daily Coast Elections, is because the so-called conservative Supreme Court justice who is up for election, his name is Andrew Pinson. He faces former Democratic Congressman John Barrow in an officially nonpartisan race that, because just two candidates are running, this is actually serving as the general election. Normally, there would be a November runoff if there had been if this had been a multi-way contest. But conservatives will still control this 9-member court no matter what happens on Tuesday, no matter how it goes in this election for a 6-year term. But a victory for Barrow would be another indication of the Peach State's shift to the left over the past few years. Barrow has been running on an ardent opposition to the state's 6-week abortion ban and has made it clear that that's why he's running, one of the reasons, the big reason that he's running, and that if he wins this thing, well, he would make history by winning this statewide seat. To win it, it'll be a tough climb because no incumbent justice has been unseated in one of these retention elections in Georgia since 1922.
Hmm.
So that's, 102 years since a sitting justice is actually lost. We'll see if that happens with Barrow running on reproductive rights. Republican Governor Brian Kemp, who appointed Justice Pinson back in 2022, is trying to counter Barrow's pro-reproductive rights message by personally appearing in ads touting Pinson as, quote, the conservative voice we can trust. So that gets us a little bit caught up. But speaking of TV ads that you definitely should not trust, let's take a quick break here. We'll come back to get the skinny on this huge multi-million-dollar effort funded by a mysteriously funded new dark money outfit, a Trump-related cabal aimed at getting Republicans elected by lying to and, frankly, scaring the hell out of Americans. A campaign that is being described as racist, vile, and transphobic. You know, Republican. Anyway, you'll see what I mean right after this when Victoria Kadostin of Documented.net joins us right after this on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial. Hey, this is Brad. Here at the broadcast and bradblog.com, we fight for election integrity all year around, like no other media outlet in the nation. But of course, we need your help to do it. Please stop by bradblog.com/donate to make an automated monthly pledge of any amount you like. or even just a one-time-only contribution to help us remain on your public airwaves and completely independent. The fight for voting rights, civil rights, and to save our planet continues. Please help us continue that fight independently over your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate right now. Go ahead, do it right now. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you.
You're listening to an encore presentation of The Bradcast.
Follow where the money goes. Follow where the money goes. Follow where the money goes. Follow the money.
Yeah, too. Welcome back to The Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. If you live in one of the presidential battleground states or swing districts around the country, there's a good likelihood that you have already seen some of their ads, which are even more offensive, frankly, when you see them rather than just hear them. But even hearing them, I think you get the idea. Here's one that focuses on one of the MAGA far right's latest hobby horses, diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, many created after the 2020 in response to the police murder of George Floyd back in 2020. These programs meant to ensure, well, diversity, equity, and inclusion in corporate hiring and school admission programs, etc.
Diversity, equity, inclusion. You hear these words everywhere, in school, business, and government. But what do these words actually mean? What is equity all about? It's left-wing code for whites and Asians not welcome. It means punishing workers and students based on their race. It means prioritizing trans job seekers over straight ones. Democrats call this equity. We know it's bigotry, and it must be defeated. Paid for by Citizens for Sanity.
Wow, that sounds bad, huh? Then there's the so-called woke war on our children going on, which is, of course, completely ridiculous, but, well, not if you ask the MAGA, sadly. But even more sadly, thanks in no small part to disinformation campaigns like these, too many of the non-MAGA Americans are also being inundated with the same disinformative, but I guess, terrifying nonsense.
There is a war on children in America, a war on biology, a war on innocence. Schools are forcing elementary school children to share bathrooms and locker rooms with the opposite sex. They're encouraging students to question if they're really boys or girls, all while hiding it from parents. So-called health organizations are promoting experimental, dangerous, and irreversible drugs and surgeries for minors. Puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones, drugs never approved for this use, leaving young children sterile, infertile, and sexually undeveloped for life. They remove healthy breasts, wombs, and genitals, all in the name of radical gender ideology. Millions of common-sense Americans know this is wrong. They know it is dangerous. They know it is crazy. Stop the woke war on our children. Stop the far-left assault on our youth. Stop the madness. Stop the insanity. Paid for by Citizens for Sanity.
As I said, nonsense, but I guess terrifying nonsense. Then, of course, there are these lies about how immigrants are flooding into the country to steal everything from you. Yes, you, including your paychecks and your children. And oh, they're terrorists, even though the facts are crime among the immigrant population is far lower than it is among American citizens. That's right. Immigrants actually lower the crime rate in the U.S., but you certainly wouldn't know it from ads like this from the very same group.
You worked hard for what you have, followed the rules, paid your taxes, saved and sacrificed for your piece of the American dream. And now it is being stolen from you, stolen from your family, stolen from your children. Joe Biden and his fellow Democrats have erased our southern border, and they have released a record number of illegal immigrants into the United States, all at your expense. This giant flood of illegal immigration is draining your paychecks, wrecking your schools, ruining your hospitals, and threatening your family. Mixed among the masses are drug dealers, sex traffickers, and violent predators. One of these criminals raped a little girl. She was 3 years old. Who is Joe Biden letting into our country? Who are the Democrats bringing into our cities? And how many more kids will suffer? Tell Biden and his friends in Washington, stop hurting our children. Citizens for Sanity paid for this ad.
Citizens for Sanity. Biden has erased our southern border. Citizens for Sanity, a dark money group spending millions of dollars on ads like these all over the country. Of course, if all of that is not already scary enough, this group, Citizens for Sanity, wants you to know the Democrats are waging a war on the police because they want, Democrats do, they want rampant crime across the nation, apparently, even though the truth is that crime rates are, in fact, lower than they have been in decades. But if you expect Citizens for Sanity to let you know that, well, think again.
For nearly 30 years, crime was falling in the United States. No more. Cities in chaos, billions in property damages, lives and families destroyed. Stop the woke war on police. Stop the far-left assault on public safety. Stop the radical left-wing love affair with criminals. Stop the insanity. Citizens for Sanity paid for this ad.
Stop the insanity, says Citizens for Sanity. Are you terrified yet? Those are among some of the least offensive of the ads, frankly, and the least misleading. I'm sorry I had to play those at all, but I felt I needed to give you an idea of what we were talking about here, as these ads from this so-called Citizens for Sanity outfit have been flooding the airwaves and coming to a television or social media feed near you if they haven't already. That's not a warning to scare you. That's just based on the demonstrable numbers. As The Guardian reported on Friday in a piece jointly written with the nonprofit watchdog and research firm known as Documented, a dark money group with ties to Donald Trump's inner circle dropped more than $90 million on ads described by media outlets as vile, racist, and transphobic in the second half of 2022 alone. That according to new tax records obtained by Documented and The Guardian. The staggering sum, they note, makes the newly created group, which is based out of the Nerve Center for the MAGA movement, one of the top political spenders in the last election cycle, as it now appears to gear up to influence voters with violent, bigoted messages in 2024. As our friend and longtime dark money expert Brendan Fisher of Documented and his colleague Victoria Kestoden detailed at The Guardian last week, the group, called Citizens for Sanity, formed in mid-2022 and quickly drew attention as it flooded the airwaves in battleground states and swing districts with deeply offensive and often misleading ads. Not long ago, they note, this kind of extreme messaging would have been relegated to far-right internet messaging boards like 4chan, but Citizens for Sanity even ran these ads during the World Series. And tax records show that Citizens for Sanity spent a stunning $93 million in just the final months of 2022 alone for payments and promotion of these ads. These new records show that wealthy special interests are spending incredible amounts of money on messaging campaigns that mainstream extremism and push patented disinformation to voters in critical swing states and districts. And that spending has continued into the 2024 cycle, with more recent ads focusing intensely on so-called anti-white racism, while other ads have targeted Democrats in competitive races, such as Democratic U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown in Ohio, who is up for re-election this year and whose election will help determine whether Republicans or Democrats end up controlling the upper chamber beginning next year. Citizens for Sanity's surge in spending in the latter half of 2022 is any indication, they write, the bulk of the group spending this cycle is yet to come. But who is Citizens for Sanity anyway? Do we have any idea at all? Well, Documented dug into that as well, as we all try to figure out who are the millionaires and billionaires, and in this case, far-right Donald Trump extremist apparatchik, apparently, helping to create the false and, yes, terrifying narrative that apparently Republicans feel they need to create in order to hoax Americans into voting for them. Joining us now is Victoria Custodian, co-author of that enlightening piece in The Guardian. She is a writer and researcher at Documented, the nonprofit watchdog, which focuses on investigating networks of dark money donors, special interests, and organizations coordinating to undermine the democratic process in the U.S., which means, I guess, that Documented is very busy these days. Victoria Custodian, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, Brad. Thank you so much for having me.
Really appreciate you joining us. We've been covering stories like this, dark money groups, for years, and all of a sudden, well, I never heard of Citizens for Sanity. So let's start there. Who runs it? Where does its tens of millions, I guess hundreds of millions of dollars at this point, actually come from? Who the hell are they?
Right. So as you mentioned, Citizens for Sanity is this dark money group that spent $93 million on ads in 2022 in just the second half. And they were one of the biggest spenders in the last election cycle. Now, what's really alarming about it is that our records show that Citizens for Sanity is housed at the Conservative Partnership Institute, which has been characterized as the nerve center of the right wing, and is really a home base for the Trump administration. CPI represents the creation of MAGA political infrastructure. And since 2020, they've gotten more sophisticated and have had more funding as they prepare for a second Trump turn in 2024. So if you look into their 2022 financial records, mm-hmm. we know that CPI and its offshoot, America First Legal, share leadership with Citizens for Sanity. Many of them are former high-up Trump officials, and the two organizations also share an address in D.C., where Conservative Partnership Institute has been buying up property for a good couple of years now.
So it feels like this group, CPI, is the parent company of Citizens for, or parent organization of Citizens for Sanity. It sounds like it's really sort of the Trump administration in waiting. It looks like it includes twice indicted Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, Trump's lawyer Cleta Mitchell. Remember, folks will remember her. She was on the phone call when Donald Trump called the Secretary of State of Georgia to threaten them, to help him find 11,000 votes. And yes, the America First Legal Group, which is run by this guy, I think, Trump's anti-immigrant chief, I guess, Stephen Miller. Now, I don't see these ads because I live in Los Angeles, not exactly a swing district, but I don't see them on TV. But I see that Stephen Miller America First Legal stuff on my Twitter feed. Are most of these ads reaching Americans via TV or is social media now the preferred method for such groups?
They've used a number of means, and including TV and radio ads. They also have many, many billboards in different states. They've managed to reach 25 of the 50 states. So they've used a couple of different means. And on the note about their leadership, Jean Hamilton, who was one of the top leaders of both America First Legal and Citizens of Sanity, which are both offshoots of CPI, Jean Hamilton is also a part of, he wrote a chapter in the Project 2025 guidebook. Mm. So as you mentioned, you know, these are all folks who are in the MAGA world very deeply, and who have a lot of power in that world, who are pushing out this messaging and really pushing out extremism.
Given that it is run by, you know, people from the Trump administration itself, Trump's former chief of staff, former attorney, and you know, speechwriter, etc., and that you describe it as the nerve center for the MAGA right, How is it not considered simply a part of the Trump campaign itself and therefore have, you know, various suspending limits and so forth applied to it?
Well, so CPI and America First Legal are filed as nonprofit organizations, 501c3s, and therefore they are not technically allowed to be spending money on elections. And I, based on our research, it shows that they stopped running the ads that target specific Democratic candidates just before the cutoff, so that they're not triggering campaign finance laws. So they've been managing to use nonprofit status to sort of hide both who their donors are and also, you know, some of the stuff that they're doing.
Do we have any idea who the funders, therefore, actually are? Is that allowed to remain completely a secret? Or is it a matter of we'll eventually know their funders, but it'll be months and months after the election?
Right. So months and months after the election, when these groups file their 2023 and 2024 990s, we might get an idea of what other organizations they're related to. For example, we'll know if Conservative Partnership Institute gave these groups money, and then we can also know who is giving money to the Conservative Partnership Institute. But these groups are not required to disclose who their donors are. So we don't know exactly where the money is coming from. We just know what it's being spent on, which is how we know that they spent $93 million on these ads. Or we might know if CPI is giving money to America First Legal or to Citizens for Sanity.
I know the documented has been exposing the various groups, for example, that are part of the Koch network for years. Is this group tied to that same network of millionaires and billionaires, or is this sort of the emergence of an all new, even more extreme network of billionaire funded, you know, hate and disinformation speech that we all have to grapple with now?
Yes, that's a great question. It seems that there is some connection to some of the to the mainstay conservative big money groups and folks from before, but a Conservative Partnership Institute and America First Legal, as I mentioned, they are they represent the creation of the MAGA political infrastructure. So we didn't really see these groups come about and gain this much money and power until 2020, until the big lie, until Trump's statements about how the election was stolen. And so then CPI and some of these groups started cropping up to support that and to build a political infrastructure that would disseminate that message and continue it even after that has been debunked.
Is it fair to say, because, listening to these ads and reading your report, it kind of sounds like the mainstreaming of the what was once sort of the subconscious of the extremist MAGA movement frankly, what Fox News has been mainstreaming for years, but now put into, 30-second, one-minute sound bites, ads with hundreds of millions of dollars paid to get it out there.
Right, exactly. And it's interesting because in 2022, in the lead up to the election, there were two sets of ads. As you mentioned, there was one set promoting racist stereotypes about Black and Latino Americans, about immigrants, and also these ads spreading lies about how DEI disenfranchises white people in order to mobilize a conservative base and speak to white Americans, to some white Americans who may already harbor some of these beliefs because they've listened to Fox News and other news talk shows like that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they produced another set of ads that aired mostly on Black radio shows and that were printed in Spanish and mailed out to folks. And this set of ads focused more so on homophobic and anti-trans messaging. And they seem to have been meant to deter Black and Latino voters from voting at all, as if to say that the Democratic Party also does not represent your best interests, and look how they are attacking our children and XYZ. So it's really fascinating, this two-pronged approach that they're taking. And we're watching out for that also as they gear up to run these ads, to run other ads in 2024.
So as you know, they're actually promoting racist stereotypes of Black and Latino voters, Americans, and so forth. And at the same time, they're putting out ads meant to target them, black and Latino voters to keep them from voting? They're sort of working both sides of that street.
Yeah, so it's really a targeted effort to stroke racial hostility and to, you know, keep people from to suppress the vote however they can on the for the base that they don't think will vote Republican or will vote conservative, mm-hmm. while at the same time pushing out messaging that will move a conservative base, a white American base, to show up at the polls.
It's really creepy because, I mean, it's very specific, it's very targeted, and, you know, in the old days, you might, you know, hear an ad like this, and we'd all talk about this ad and how outrageous it is, but we are talking about just tons and tons of ads with tens of millions of dollars behind it. One of them, and I think it was one of them that we played here at the top of the segment, talks about diversity, equity, and inclusion. You know, or the new right-wing hobby horse of DEI, as left-wing code that they're, you know, claiming DEI is left-wing code for whites and Asians not welcome. Now that one is interesting. They're sort of grouping Asians with whites here. Can you explain the psychology and/or politics behind those sorts of ads for me?
Well, it seems to be to in the way that they conservatives have been attacking DEI, mm-hmm. They've used Asian Americans to do that, to say that, look, Asian Americans are also being targeted by DEI metrics because they are overrepresented in higher education or things of that nature. Mm-hmm. When we know that, in fact, DEI metrics help pretty much all people, including white Americans. In fact, white women are the biggest profiters from DEI initiatives. So it's really interesting. And as you mentioned, it is very sinister the way that they are twisting this and using disinformation to mobilize one particular base versus another.
If these were you know, run by actual campaigns, these sorts of ads, or even, you know, super PACs that were clearly tied to a specific candidate, those candidates would be held accountable for this sort of stuff by voters. But who really knows who Citizens for Sanity is? I mean, is this basically just a consequence-free way for the right to get out their messages? Are they, you know, are campaigns themselves allowed to give money to these groups to run messages that they might like but don't want to put their name on?
For now, there's not any way to know because we don't have access to who their donors are or where exactly they're getting all of this money from. However, given how closely top Trump officials are working with groups like CPI and the America First Legal and Citizens for Sanity, that's a good guess, I'd say.
Is there any equivalent on the left of this type of group, or, you know, among Democrats for this sort of campaigning?
Not that I know of, and I don't think it would benefit Democrats to run this kind of campaign.
Is there anything unlawful about any of it, Victoria? And if there is, who would take action on it? That would be the FEC that we'd have to count on to do anything about it.
Right. So, yes. So if there is, obviously, you know, if you are running a nonprofit that is tax deductible, then you are not allowed to be involved in campaigning. So, yes, it would be on the FEC to catch this. But we are hoping also at Documented that some of our research will help shed light on this so that at least voters are aware and mm-hmm. the general public is aware that this is going on.
I mean, in the end, it sort of seems to me like this is just free speech. As offensive and horrible as it might be, that it's just free speech, even if it's full of lies and scare tactics, they really can say anything they want, and nothing can stop them, it would seem to me, other than a specific campaign finance violation, and that doesn't seem to be coming into play here, correct?
Right. It doesn't seem to be coming into play as far as we know yet, again, because we don't have access to their financial records at the moment. But we also know that these divisive ads and the spreading of misinformation in order to sway folks in swing districts and divided districts have a real impact outside of just voting. This kind of messaging supports the rise of anti-trans legislation and violence against trans folks, especially trans Black women, as well as the rise in anti-immigrant sentiment and legislation and violence. So it's definitely worth being vigilant about how powerful folks are throwing money around to manufacture racial and gendered hostility in the voting population. And it's also just further evidence that attacks on equality and attacks on democracy are often coming from the exact same place.
Finally, Victoria Kedostin, as you know, these ads even ran during the World Series, I guess, back in 2022. It kind of feels like this is basically the ultimate end of what dark money hath now wrought in American electoral politics. And if so, is there anything that can be done about it other than trying to expose where these ads are coming from, who is paying for them, et cetera, as you are doing at Documented? Is that basically all that we can do here?
Well, the hope is that with this information, groups on the ground and other folks who would be affected and targeted by this will have the information and be able to combat it. But also that, you know, there can be legislative action taken against this if we know that these groups are operating and using nonprofit status to do this kind of thing.
Legislation that would necessarily have to include Republicans playing along, which seems difficult to even fathom at this point. Victoria, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was agreeing. Very
okay.
True.
Okay. Victoria Kedostin, I will point folks, of course, to your article with a lot of good details and a lot of great links to, a whole bunch of folks trying to figure out who the hell these people are and what they are up to at The Guardian. Headlined, Trump-linked dark money group spent $90 million on racist and transphobic ads in 2022, according to records, written by Victoria Kedostin and Brendan Fisher, our friend also over at Documented, where Victoria is a writer and researcher. You can find their work always at documented.net and on the Twitters at itsdocumented. Victoria Kedostin, really appreciate you joining us today. Keep up the good work, and we'll hopefully stay in touch as this madness moves forward.
Thank you so much, Brad.
You bet. Thank you. Okay, you know what? She had mentioned some of the billboards. I didn't even get into those billboards.
Oh, yeah?
That these guys are. Yeah. You want to hear a couple of
yes.
these billboards? We got a minute or two?
I think so.
They're so obnoxious. Here's one. Violent criminals deserve our compassion and respect. This fall, stand strong for progressive values. So they're just, you know, misleading people.
Well, of course. They're misappropriating the words in order to change their definitions and confuse people.
Open the jails. Open the borders. Close the schools. Vote progressive this November. Mm. Here's one you'll like, Des. Protect pregnant men from climate discrimination.
What?
I have no idea what it means, but of course it's meant to trigger people, trigger not just Republicans, but, you know, trigger anybody to say, oh, this is an outrage. Let's,
yes.
I'm going to vote against these progressives and these liberals.
Trigger your outrage, trigger division, all
yep.
of that.
Yep.
And, you know, I think one other thing that she had mentioned, that Victoria had mentioned, that I thought was really surprising and made total sense was that, you know, not only were these nonprofit groups putting these out in, you know, in literature that you might receive in the mail, but these were also, as you noted, getting aired on major corporate media like, you know, MLB,
yeah.
the baseball games
yeah.
and stuff. And it sort of infiltrated into the kind of legacy media that would previously have turned away ads like this. But I guess the networks all enjoy that all that campaign cash from running all of these ads. So they're not going to put in the same filters that they used to. Plus, with the billboards and the radio ads and the TV ads just kind of all playing in the background, it's like racist wallpaper on your
yep.
TV and radio just kind of infiltrating yep. into people's ears and brains when they're not actually paying close attention to what's actually being said.
And you make a good point that we get around to every 2 or 4 years, which is that, you know, as outrageous as these ads are and the huge amount of money, when we talk about dark money that flows into the elections, that pays for all of these ads, Yeah, that huge amount of, you know, talking about almost $100 million in it, with this one group alone back in the midterm elections. That money, that outrageous amount of money that they are raising, that goes to the mainstream media.
Yes.
That goes to, you know, to NBC, ABC, CBS, all the rest. They're the ones who get the money. So when you wonder why you don't see coverage of the outrage of dark money in our elections by the mainstream media, well, they're the ones who are actually profiting from all of this. So, of course, they're not going to cover it and you know, let people know who's behind all of these things.
Yeah, it was an orgy of money in the 2020 election. If I remember correctly, it was something in the neighborhood of $1 billion spent in advertising alone on the TV networks and on radio. So, again, it's our public airwaves, not, you know, and cable as well, being abused by the big money folks in order to spread this kind of racist propaganda.
So, of course, the corporate media is not going to call it out. Of course, we have to rely on groups like Documented.net, not-for-profit organizations like the Guardian in the UK. They're actually a not-for-profit news outlet. And that's who we have to rely on.
And unfortunately, we don't find out about these expenditures, these campaign finance expenditures, in real time because they're not required to disclose it in real time. We don't hear about it until after the election is over, 6 months or so. Then these reports get put out, and then folks like Documented go in and do the research, which takes time and eyeballs to compile to actually find out what's happening.
We're talking about, you know, the spending in 2022, here we are in 2024, finally getting some of those numbers. And we still don't know who's funding these nonprofit groups. All we know is the name of the nonprofit groups. We don't know the names of the people putting the money into them.
Right. And so obviously, you know, we've talked for years about how you have to get money out of politics. But how do you get money out of politics? Well, you get it out of politics by electing people who pledge to do so, which is really hard.
I say you get it out of politics by giving it to the Bradcast, because we could use your funding.
Well, there you go.
At bradcast.com/donate to stay on your public airwaves through the rest of the election year. No, we don't get any of that money for any of that hundreds of millions of dollars for those ads, because we don't play them. We don't sell out to anyone that is, other than you, our listeners. Anyway, got to get out. My thanks again to Victoria Kadostin of Documented.net and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. No paywall for anybody there, so you can get right on in. But we do appreciate your support. Oh, also, thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen.
Yes.
You can drop me an email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter, you will find me at The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.